In case you're not aware, on Friday night, we had the biggest hack in history, in crypto history, but also I think the biggest hack in history, where one of our partner exchanges, Bybit, was hacked for $1.4 billion worth of ETH. Today, I've got a very special treat for you guys. Today, I've got the CEO of Bybit, who's going to be with us, and he's going to tell us exactly what happened. He's going to give us a step-by-step account and tell us exactly what happened, as well as clear up what they're going to do about the missing ETH. And whether the exchange is going to continue to run, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk about everything today. We've got Ben with us today. It's a live. It's the first YouTube show that Ben has done since the hack. And we're bringing it to you live on Banter. So if that sounds good to you, what I need you guys to do is I need you guys to subscribe to the channel. I need you guys to obliterate the like button. And let's get the show on the road. So I did tweet sometime this weekend and I said, you know, like Friday nights in crypto have been like pretty rough. Like if you look at all the Fridays this year, on Friday the 17th of January, we had Trump token launch and that drained a whole lot of liquidity from the crypto markets. Then the following Friday, we had the DeepSeek dump. Then the following Friday, we had Trump threatening tariffs. And that was that big ETH liquidation. Then the following Friday or two Fridays later, we had the Libra launch, which obliterated the markets. And then just a week later, on Friday the 21st, we get the biggest hack in history. We had a hacker or a group of hackers that stole $1.4 billion from Bybit. And it was a fascinating hack. If you understand the details of what these hackers actually did and how they actually got access to the ETH, it's really, really, really scary. It's pretty much game-changing. So I thought what we'd do today is something very different. I thought what we'd do today is focus on security and focus on understanding exactly how this happened. And also, I think it's going to be a masterclass in how to manage crises, because I think the way that Bybit actually managed this crisis was absolutely, absolutely mind-blowing. So that's what we're going to be doing today. So if that sounds good to you, obliterate the like button. And without any further ado, I'm going to get Ben, who is the founder of Bybit, with us. Ben, welcome, my friend.
Hey, Ryan, how are you doing?
Good. More importantly, how are you doing, sir?
It was extremely tough night on Friday, and I think for the past 2 days the whole team was up, and I managed to get a few hours sleep, so not too bad.
So I want to actually go back. Take me back to Friday night. From what I understand, you guys were doing what is kind of a routine procedure. It is where you move money from a cold wallet to a hot wallet. For people who don't know what that means, is exchanges typically have hot wallets, which is the wallets that they used to drive the day-to-day operations of the exchange. And then you get a cold wallet, which is traditionally a much more secure wallet, and it's usually removed from the internet and generally much, much, much harder to hack. It's usually seen as the safer of the wallets. And usually that is a reason why people store a lot more money in cold wallets than they do in hot wallets. Ben, as part of your routine operations, I guess that what you were doing was you were trying to move money from a cold wallet to a hot wallet just for the exchange operations?
That is correct. And exactly, Ron, you said, right. How we structure the wallet system is very similar to most of the exchange, where we have what we call the hot wallet, which is completely automated. That's how you can achieve the instant withdrawal experience that you have on Bybit. And in the middle, there is actually a warm wallet, which involves a few admins that we appointed to click and make sure that to approve the transaction. So that's not a manual one. Both the hot and the warm wallet are inbuilt part of the Bybit system. And then for majority of the money that we typically don't use, we put it in the cold wallet. In this case, for Ethereum, it's a multi-sig cold wallet, meaning that it requires multiple signers to sign, which I'm part of it as well, in order to transfer the fund.
So in your case, you guys had four signers. The four signers, as I understand, were in different parts of the world. And you guys typically move money from the cold wallet to the warm wallet, what, once a month, once a week? How often do you guys move money from the cold wallet to the hot wallet?
Well, if you ask around in the past year, I would say once every almost 2 weeks. It really depends if the market is really active and a lot of client is withdrawing and depositing. We might do it more frequent, as frequent as every week, or every few days. So it depends on the level of Ethereum or Bitcoin that we have in our wallet. Yeah.
So when this happens, like, just walk me through how an exchange works. Do you guys get onto like a WhatsApp group and say, "Hey guys, we need money. Can let's get together and sign?" Or how do you guys coordinate this internally?
So there is a dedicated communication tool we use internally for communicating this. And this channel is only dedicated to talk about withdrawal requests from the cold wallet or go back into the cold wallet or from the cold wallet into our system. And bear in mind that we have multiple cold wallets, such as the Bitcoin cold wallet, Ethereum related, XRP and things like that. So it's a dedicated channel and is only used for communication of that.
So Friday night, you get a message saying, "Okay, guys, we need to move money." This is a pretty routine message, right? It's routine. You get this on a Friday night. And what do you then do? So you're the last of the four signers, as I understand, which means that the other three had pretty much signed before you got the message. What did you then do?
No, so the message was sent, I would say, early in the afternoon, and then the signer began to sign. So it was typically saying, "Hey, we need to move." In this case, 30,000, I remember, Ethereum back to our wallet system to top up. We're running low. So that would typically be the message. And then a few security protocol along with the message, the address, and how it's double-checked, and then basically say, "Signers, please sign." So by the time I saw in the afternoon, and then I know in this time I'm the last one in the sequence. Once I waited, everyone signed, which is also I was having some meetings. So about 9:30 my time, I was in Singapore. I saw the message that everyone else finished signing. So I just get on and I follow the normal procedures to proceed signing the transaction.
And when you're signing this kind of transaction, are you using a special laptop? Is it the laptop that you use all the time? Like, how do you sign a transaction like this?
Yeah, so in this case, this whole incident happened around Ethereum. And everyone must know that for Ethereum, actually the multisig, it's an online version. It's not exactly 100% code. When we say 100% code, it meaning the signing machine is completely offline. But Ethereum is a smart contract based multisig, meaning that the transaction needs to happen online. So in this case, when we signed the Ethereum multisig, we use the safe multisig. They're a multisig kind of a wallet, cold wallet provider, and their interface is online. So what we do is I would use my work laptop to sign the transaction. What we do as a security security clearance is to clear the laptops every month to check for Trojans and things like that. But the signing process is actually from a browser, and the URL is from the official website of Safe.
Okay, so you then sign the transaction and it's business as usual, right? So you're signing the transaction and now it's business as usual. When do you realize that something is wrong? Because we saw a message from ZachXBT, probably a couple of, it says 520, which probably means 920. It says, "Currently monitoring suspicious outflows from Bybit, 1.46 billion, will update as soon as information becomes available." When do you realize something's wrong?
I think we realized probably before his post. I would assume I signed it around 9 o'clock. And then by 9:15, I get a call from my CFO.
Tell me about that call. How does the call go? Your phone rings. So, you see it's your CFO. It's 9 o'clock Friday night. I guess it's not normal for him to call you 9 o'clock on a Friday night.
Yeah, immediately, especially after I signed, and that's kind of a bad signal. And when I answered, I noticed it's him and our security team in the call. So immediately I start to have a quiet, I get some butterflies in my stomach, basically. And I was like, okay, this is not going to be good. And then his voice was just shaky. He's just like, Ben, I'm mocking him now. He's like jittering, saying that we, you know, Ben, I think we have a problem. And I thought, okay, we lost 30,000 Ethereum. So, and I said, okay, is that the last transaction we just signed? He says, no, it's a lot bigger. It's the whole wallet. And I asked him, what do you mean whole wallet? How much balance do we have in that wallet? He says about 400,000 Ethereum. By then I was like, 400,000, kind of, okay, how much? And he says about $1.5 billion.
Okay, now wait, stop, stop. I want to know at that exact moment when he said to you, it's $1.5 billion. Walk me through what's happening in your head at this point. Like, what's your thought process? You realize that you've been hacked for $1.4 billion. What's going through your head?
Yeah, by then, it's really a lot of butterflies in my stomach, and I feel a bit sick, and I was like, okay. As long as I heard the word billion, I'd say, okay. But I kind of ran my head, how much do we have as a company? And then to reassure, I asked also my CFO, okay, can we cover this loss? So that was the first kind of reaction.
So you ask him, can you cover the loss? He says, yes, we have enough funds. Now walk me through what goes through your head.
No, but immediately I asked, is this all the damage? You know, is this the only wallet that's been hacked? And then my security team started to explain. They said, yes, it looks like it's whatever we just signed, which is our Ethereum cold wallet. It has for about 400,000, a little more than 400,000 Ethereum in it. And that totals about 1.5. And I said, you guys, we need to make sure that it is only this wallet and the problem is contained. And then my security team says, yes, it's contained. Because in my head then, completely two directions that we go. If it's amount that's more than whatever we have, then I need to set the emergency response past that to maybe my COO or another founders, so that I can focus on where can we get the money, right? But then, as long as I heard that, I understand we can cover it. Then I know my priority is to face the next emergency response, which is the potential bank run and the news and everything. Yeah.
Okay, so wow, so you've now realized you've lost $1.4 billion. As a matter of interest, who's the first person that you called? Who's the first person other than the security people and the security people and your financial officer? Who's the first person that you then phoned, your best friend, a wife? Who do you tell? Like, do you tell anyone, or did you just go straight into crisis mode?
Oh yeah, so after hearing the basically the 1.5 I asked about, and it took me, well, before I asked about, after 1.5 billion, I was kind of really shaky, and then I started thinking, oof, you know, 1.5, what do I do? And then I told myself to snap out of it. I need to put the CEO hat on and to really command. I need to go into the commanding mode to get ready for the company to face a crisis. So that's maybe within 10 seconds, I snap out of it. And then the first person I called is actually my COO to make sure that my frontline people would immediately know. Because in my head, if this was, and I asked how much was this transfer? They said all of it, one go into a unidentified wallet. Then I would have assumed that already people are outside, like the post you show me, already they start to see the problem. So I need to tell everyone that I need to get ready for the crisis mode. So I called my COO and then start to explain the whole thing. Yeah.
And your COO obviously had no idea that this was happening until you explained it to her, right? She had no idea why you were calling.
She had no idea.
Okay, how did she respond?
I think she was probably shocked afterwards when I talked to her, and she was shocked for a while. But she also knows that at this time is not time to think about the consequence, think about what does it mean, the number, but to get to work. And that is, we have a, what we call in company, we have crisis management. And we also have monthly incident drills that's responding to all type of platform incident, whether it's website goes down, you know, withdrawal system doesn't happen. So we have a whole drill. So I think she immediately went into the drill mode. And then there's a few buttons that we all have as top management. One of them is called P-1. Once we call that button, it literally wakes up everyone in the company. And then I think she probably proceeded with the drill and then to kind of wake up all the top management. Get ready for all of the PR team, social media team, frontline team to get ready. Yeah.
So I'm interested to understand how P-1 works. You press one button. How do you wake up people that are asleep? I mean, this is 9 o'clock at night in Singapore. It means that in other time zones, it's later and sometimes it's earlier. Like, how do you wake people up? What do you do? Phone their wives, phone their home phones? What's the protocol?
So we have a whole drill protocol to practice emergencies. And then for P-1, it's for sure trying to get all of the heads up. And then they would have subsequent buttons to call top management of, let's say, support team or all of the support team. So it goes like waves. So if my COO press her button, it will wake up the PR head, the customer support head, the social media head, basically all the business, the BD team, the institution team head. With this call, it would automate constantly calling on a phone number. We rely on phone number. And then is our protocol that you go to sleep with your phone next to you and make sure that is on. Don't turn it off. So because that's the last resort for us to get to you. And also in the system, if the first call is made, it's not picked up, it will call the replacement, the deputy head of, let's say, the support team, until someone picks up. And then you can, and then once you call it, we use this tool called LARC, which is our communication tool. Automated P-1 group is created. And then you have a guy who is the MC or the leading. In this case, it will be either me or COO. To explain what happened, and then everyone joins, clicks on that button, join the call. It's an online meeting form, and then you have someone taking notes for the action, and so you have a share screen, yeah, and then some taking actions. Customer support, you do this. PR team, you do this. So it's all drilled, yeah.
Okay, and then I guess that at that point you snapped into CEO mode. Sorry, you snapped into CEO mode, and then. I guess at that point you wrote this tweet and you became, the first thing you did was you became transparent.
Yes, I know. I mean, on this type of scale, 1.5 billion, we have to go as transparent as possible. And I know that there will be a lot of questions that the clients and partners ask. And the best way to solve a crisis like this is use transparency and communication. So after I told my COO the thing and what happened, and I believe she proceeded to wake up all the subsequent and brief them what happened and prepare for the incoming questions. And then that's when I sit down and drafted this tweet.
Yeah. Where were you when you drafted this tweet?
This one, I'm at home still.
Okay, and then so you draft the tweet, and then what? You stayed at home. You go to the office. Where was the best place to deal with such a crisis?
Yeah. So after I drafted this message, I posted. Maybe immediately, I was thinking it's not enough because people is gonna ask a lot more questions. They expect what to, what's happening. So then I left. I called my COO again, and I told her get the live stream team in the office. I'll meet them there. So that's when I head to the office get ready for the live stream that's about to happen. Yeah.
And then you guys did a very long live stream. I've got the live stream here. So that was you then did a very long live stream. I mean, it was 1 hour 45 minutes. I really appreciated the fact that the live stream was going, but on the other hand, aren't there better uses of a CEO's time than being in front of a camera at a time where you have no idea what's actually going on? Because I'm assuming at this point, number one, you don't know who the hacker is. Number two, you have no idea how the hacker actually got into your system. Number three, I imagine that at this point, the withdrawals were starting to mount, right? Because we know that there were thousands and thousands and thousands of withdrawals. Walk me through what your thinking was in actually doing a live stream of all the things that you could have done.
So, yes, I was running the command. So after I told the CEO, when she's talking, basically I had a quick conversation with people online with me, which is my security and my CFO. And I asked them the exact nature of the hack. Is our system contaminated? Meaning that my biggest concern is the hacking happened by penetrating the Bybit withdrawal system. And at that moment, from my security team, they said they found no trace of any type of contamination or penetration through our system. This is a critical message. It means that all of Bybit system is intact. All of the Bybit withdrawal is safe. And the only issue is that the cold wallet we use, which is a third-party provider, Genesis Safe, is contaminated. As long as we don't touch that, we don't move any money from that area, the Bybit internal system is all green. And that's when I know that I don't need to be spending too much time on figuring out the next contamination. And we are safe on that front. And also, that's when I decided that no withdrawal is going to be halt. We're not going to do any of that. All system is going to be green. So I don't have to worry about trying to pause the system and find out who is the hacker, right? It only happened there. And that's when I say, okay, then at this point, the priority is not about chasing money or finding out what happened. It's already done. Is about communication, because we're going to experience the biggest bank run that we're going to ever see. And for this matter, a live stream is critical. And also during the live stream, when I sit down with the staff before we start the live stream, we had a few goals. Number one, when I talked to them, I said, look, we're probably going to be a long time to make sure that everyone understand. And also for news and media and any outlets, they will get the first-hand source from my live stream so that all the information are accurate and also from the source. So there's no speculation. There's no other things that, leads to even more FUD.
More FUD, yeah.
Yeah, and also one thing, key thing we talked about is I need someone else with me in that live stream while I go get new update and make decisions since the team might need me to make decisions. So we found Sun Yit, who's our head of institution and derivatives, to be in that spot. Also, we made a holding slide. In case both of us are gone, we will tell the clients exactly what time we will be back. Now, initially, for example, it was just saying we will be back, but we didn't like it because when you say we will be back, nobody knows when you will be back. But giving them a time, it makes them feel safe. It makes them feel that we're here. So after that, all that was discussed, then the live stream started. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just showing this. I don't know if you can see, but I'm actually just showing all the different slides and everything. Okay. So now you've done this, the thing. And then if I remember correctly, the number of withdrawals skyrockets. I was watching the dashboards. I don't remember what the balance was before. I think it was around 17 billion or something along those lines, or more. And then all of a sudden, we start seeing a whole lot of withdrawals. Walk me through what's going through your head. Because if I understand correctly, one of the things that you really can't do is move money from a cold wallet, or at least any other ETH cold wallet, back to a warm wallet, because you still don't know how, you still have no idea how you got hacked, which means that any touching of any other cold wallet would probably mean having to take the same risk again, right?
Correct.
So now you've got this bank run. A lot of your money is, I'm assuming, still in cold wallets. And you must be at this point, if I understand correctly, you're probably just watching the hot wallet balance and going, dear God, please, can you make sure that the hot wallet balance doesn't start running too low, right?
Yeah. So when I arrive office, if we continue the story, I sit there and the next thing I did was crafting a message to the company because I know that we're going to be experiencing one of the largest bank run in the history of the company. And my biggest concern is not about client withdraw all the money because we are one-to-one backed. So clients is able to withdraw all the money. And the only issue here is that we have a shortfall in Ethereum because it's just been stolen. That means, by the way, the hacker stole about 70% of our Ethereum reserves, meaning that 70% of the client's Ethereum was gone. But when the first thing I asked is, can we cover it? Meaning that we have enough reserve or treasury as Bybit, the company, to cover this 1.5 billion. But our cash or reserve is not in Ethereum. It could be in stable coins, in Bitcoins, and multiple other assets. So there is this gap needs to be filled. If all the clients are trying to withdraw, especially Ethereum, we don't have enough Ethereum.
And chances are that because people know Ethereum is stolen, people would want to check if they could get their Ethereum back, which makes it probably much worse, right?
Exactly. So the number one priority is to get Ethereum. It's not wise to use our cash to buy at the moment because we're probably just going to, completely pump the market. So the easiest solution is to get bridge loan from other institutions who have a lot of Ethereum. We will give them Bitcoin or whatever we have as collateral to get those, to fulfill those withdrawal demand.
But
that's number one.
If you're borrowing money, borrowing ETH from other institutions, partners, whoever it is, you still effectively owe them Ethereum, which means that effectively you're still short $1.4 billion worth of ETH, right? I mean, you can borrow 50,000 Ethereum, but you owe someone 50,000 Ethereum.
Correct. But by end of the day, we need to buy it back.
Okay. So
at the end of the day, we need to buy it back to fulfill our reserve ratio and to match the client's balance back to 1-to-1.
Okay. Yeah. So now you're getting this bunch of withdrawals. Walk me through what's happening at Bybit. Like, how bad was the withdrawals?
So I know by then, getting a loan is an option. And my next concern is with the bank run, I'm really concerned the system stability because we've never seen so many withdrawals. And we just is going to be witnessing the most withdrawals that we've ever seen. And now looking back, we did, it was the largest withdrawal amount within about 2 hours. We had about 400,000 withdrawal requests. So I was quite concerned about the system stability because imagine the worst is because we are going to keep up the withdrawal. So the withdrawal was never disabled. We were always accepting. But imagine there's so many people withdraw at the same time and the system went down, or the withdrawal system went down because we never tolerated so many withdrawals at the same time. So then I have to make sure that my CTO gets all the tech people up and making sure that they monitor the situation to make sure that every single withdrawal request can come through, and so we can process them. So that was the second thing I saw, and that's when I sit down and wrote a company-wide message to all of the internal employees.
Mm. And just walk me through the message. What did the message say?
So the message, I can read it to you. It says a CEO message. This is within our 1,800 staff group. I said, "Dear all my buddies," which is what we call our internal employees, "understand that it is a difficult time now. Appreciate that all of you stand in line. It's going to be a difficult 24 to 48 hours that we will face. However, that I'm confident that we will all make it through. Please ensure that we remain professional and calm to all clients and external partners. We will try our best to maintain withdrawal. At the same time, I want to say that even with this amount loss, all clients' assets are still covered. It is time to answer clients' questions in timely manner and to be there with our clients, and we will use transparency and communication to remove doubts from our clients. Tech and product, please make sure all systems are normal. We cannot have any fuck up now to cause another FUD. All hands on deck." And that's the message. Sure. I sent right before I go on the stream, to internal teams.
How bad were the withdrawals? Like how many withdrawals? Walk me through the numbers.
It was insane. So basically within that hour, I think probably 300,000.
300,000?
Yeah, 300,000 withdrawal requests. And when we receive a withdrawal request, it's not so easy. Everything goes to hot water, just bam, bam, bam. Typically, it goes through many different checkpoints. One would be risk check, making sure that it is from the clients himself. Imagine if a client also get hacked at the time. We want to make sure that it's secure. And also, there's other security and risk check to make sure the balance is correct, the system is all functional. And also, you have AML KYC check to make sure that it doesn't go to a sanctioned address and things like that. So there's multiple checks, and the queue, which is huge. And then basically, we have all the support team, everyone, and the review team. Everyone is up to process all of these withdrawals. And understand at the time, some of the withdrawals might take a few hours, and people were panicking. And that's why the purpose of the live stream was quite crucial, as I was there to tell them that, look, all system is up. We are processing them. It's just we are experiencing a huge spike in withdrawal requests. It's not we are trying to intentionally hold your withdrawal. We are processing them at the speed that we possibly could.
How long did it take to process all the backlog? And where are we now? I mean, we're now 48 hours later almost. Is everything processed? Is it all done?
Oh, yeah. Everything is processed within 12 hours. So we processed about 400,000 withdrawal requests within 12 hours. And by the 12-hour mark, which is about everyone's been up all night, about 8 o'clock a.m. Singapore time. There was no more pending withdrawal from the time around that peak time hours. So by then, all of the requests are new withdrawal requests coming in.
And as a CEO,
the system has been functional since then to now. We are back to normal.
Yeah. As a CEO, I mean, what are you doing? Are you watching dashboards? Are you watching metrics? What does a CEO do? I mean, you can't get on the phone and process withdrawals.
No.
You can't be approving withdrawals. As a CEO, other than live streaming, what are you doing? What are you watching? How are you managing this?
Yeah, I think Bybit really shows through this crisis that we are really internally managed in such precise way that we have many key persons that monitor different dashboards. So we know exactly at which given point the stockpile of our assets to withdrawal ratio, meaning that for the hot wallet, you have thousands, different chain, Polygon, and different, even for Ethereum, there's multiple on multiple chains and subchains. So at any given point, we can see the requests and then the balance. And then if we process, we show what the balance will look like. And we can see an overall bank run per process, how many clients is coming in to withdraw compared to the overall ratio. So all of that is being managed by different heads, head of wallet, head of finance, head of security, head of risk check, to make sure that if they see a red alert, which we built in the system, they will only let me know whenever it's a red. So I'm able to do this live stream. And I think and I'm able to make all these calls because we really have full confidence on what we have, metrics, alarm system, internally to make sure we're consistent.
You know, I must say, like, once, you know, I've always been enamored and fascinated by leadership. And before I sold my marketing company, I remember that publicists who were the buyers came to me and they said to me, well, how do you define the role of a leader? And I said, I think the role of a leader is to create culture in an organization. And then they said to me, well, how do you define culture? And I said, culture is what happens if the CEO is not around. How do the troops act? Do they act exactly the same way that the CEO would act? It sounds to me like at Bybit, you guys have an unbelievable culture. It sounds to me like whilst, you know, if a CEO can be on a live stream during the biggest crisis in the companies, it feels to me like the culture of the people underneath the CEO must be absolutely, absolutely impeccable. I mean, is that how it is?
Yes, I would have to say that the team was unspectable during the whole process. It was insane. I think everyone was spot on. There was not a single bit of doubt, not a single bit of complaining, and also no confusion. I mean, when I get to the office, by the time I get to the office, this is about 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes after, actually 20 minutes after my COO called the P-1 probably. And there's already, you know, my whole legal team is in the office. My live stream team was there. I think the customer support team was there. Pretty much I see people are running into the office, everyone focused with the goal. They are running there, they're going there, they're doing this and that. So there wasn't panicking. And I think it, thanks to our culture, I think is we've always did the drills. It was very clear that who does what. We managed in such a tight ship, so everyone knows what to do when they find maybe a crack in the boat. You know,
I mean, I think this is a masterclass in leadership. I think this is a masterclass in how to handle crises. But I have to ask you, like, you've just lost $1.5 billion. You're watching your systems potentially about to shut down. You know that if the system shut down, it could potentially destroy your entire business because then people would start fudding and then you'd lose customers and you'd lose customers forever. And then you post this and pretty much it shows that your stress level didn't go over 0.2. What am I missing here? Like Ben, I just wanna, if I was wearing a Whoop now, I think I would be on 0.8. Now, while I'm listening to your story, okay, explain to me how did you remain so calm? I mean, you've just lost $1.5 billion. You're at risk of losing your empire, which I think you have. Like, you have an amazing, you've built an amazing business over many years. How do you remain so calm?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of my nature. I'm quite, I have always been quite okay with stress. I actually, frankly, I don't feel so much stress for things. And once I'm on that CEO hat, I know my job is to steer the ship, command the big decisions. By the way, at the time, there was many incident that pop up even on top of what you already know. For example, we have 3 billion in stablecoin that's stuck with also safe. And because we're experiencing this huge bank run, all the Ethereum based cold wallet, we cannot move. And now everything is in doubt. So my biggest concern is no longer Ethereum, which I already assigned a team to get a bridge loan, but I have 3 billion in USDT that's stuck now with SAFE, and I'm not there to touch it. And if the and with our estimation, if the bank run goes to about, you know, a 60% level, we need to touch that. So then I need to assign a whole team, my wallet team, rather than investigating into the issue, I ask them to give me a solution. So they actually build a new software based on EtherScan to be able to withdraw this fund not using SAFE UI, using our own UI we just built within a few hours.
And your first and test case, And your first test case of using the software, knowing that you've just been hacked, is to transfer $3 billion.
The first real case of this is, yes, $3 billion.
So in the middle of a crisis, after you've just been hacked for $1.5 billion, you assign your software team to write you a completely new program. And the first time you get to test this new program is to transfer $3 billion after you've lost $1.5 billion.
Essentially, yes, because...
And your stress levels are at 0.2. Bro, hold on. Ben, I'm sweating. I'm sweating. And I'm not even in this, okay?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, and wait, how did that transfer go? How did the transfer go?
That became the urgent issue that nobody knew. With our dashboard, when you see a bank run, most clients are actually out of our surprise, we assume everyone will be trying to withdraw Ethereum, but no, everyone is trying to withdraw stablecoins. So we had maybe 70% of the withdrawal happening on stablecoins.
Oh my God.
And then we can see that, okay, we will need stablecoin quite soon. And there's no way to get a $3 billion bridge loan on top of the Ethereum that we are going to get a bridge loan. And that means we might need to hold withdrawal at some point. And then I asked the team to give me estimation of how long we can last based on the current trend of USDT withdrawal. And they said about maybe 8 hours. So that's when I assigned the wallet team to give me a solution. They tested many things. In the end, they said, Ben, we find a solution. We can use EtherScan. On top of it, we'll build a tool. And then we will get the signers to come one by one. And this is how it's going to work. They present me the whole plan and the whole flow, how they think it's going to be completely secured. I said, okay, try it. And then run a few tests with other wallets. So they ran it. They built it around 7 hour mark.
I want you just to know that on my watch, my heart rate is not 90. It was at 60 before you started this story, just so you understand. just monitoring my own heart rate. Okay, so you implement this. The withdrawals come. I saw at some point that this was posted, that two, what you would probably call competitors, transferred you $100,000 worth of ETH. Is that correct? I mean, did Binance and BitGet really just send you $50,000 worth of ETH each?
Out of partners, Ant Alpha was the first one that we reached out. They are the biggest miner. We know they have a lot of Ethereum. So they were the first one. And then Galaxy Capital was one that we know have a lot of Ethereum. We reached out. I think someone else we reached out initially.
But wait, talk me through this discussion, because I'm assuming that they are seeing a perceived risk here that, you know, maybe your business is going to go insolvent. Like, we don't know what the hackers got. Are these guys just sending you, like, if a friend phones me and asks me for 5 ETH, it takes me 3 weeks to put together a contract. Explain to me how these discussions are going. Like, what are these? Yeah. What do these discussions sound like? Hey, bro, it's so Ben. I need 100,000 ETH.
Yeah. So first of all, I wasn't the one doing this conversation. I assigned this task to one of the key person, and she was the one running around talking to all these guys. While she talked, she first had our legal team to draft a bridge loan contract.
Okay.
In a bridge loan contract, you would give them equivalent collateral or over collateral, meaning that if we are borrowing 100 million in Ethereum, we'll give you 110 million worth of Bitcoin for that loan. So then the conversation was easy. But then after about 30 minutes, when she called, when she started doing this, she called me. I got another bad news. Because of this incident and it was happened on Safe, Safe have terminated their front end to investigate this whole situation. What it means is that the guys we're talking to, like Ant Alpha and these guys, their Ethereum is also stuck because they are also, Genesis Safe is the industry standard. So we have all the part who can borrow us the Ethereum, they cannot borrow because Safe is down to investigate what happened. And this is why you see some of the flow came from Binance. It was actually the balance they had on Binance. And in this case, was Ant Alpha that sent us the first Ethereum through Binance because they can only send through Binance. And that's what it was about, maybe 20 or 30,000 from Binance. Okay. So that was another issue we ran into.
So you guys, you worked through the night. Night's the morning. The exchange withdrawals have normalized. The exchange is still solvent. I mean, obviously, we can look at it now and we can see that the exchange still has ample reserves. Where is your head now? Like, has your head at any point in time said, okay, I want to try and recover the money? Or like, at some point you realize that this money is potentially with a North Korean-funded hacker, a terrorist hacker group, Lazarus. That was, I think the first person to break that was Zach XBT. I think this was the first thing. At any point in time, does your head turn back to how am I going to recover this ETH?
I'm only started thinking about it today.
Today,
to be honest,
48 hours today, later.
About 20, 30 hours later. But during the first 24, it was all about emergency response. How do we calm down the clients? I think to me, what's more important is that Bybit walk out of it still with the trust of the community and our clients. They know that we've handled this. They know that we can cover the loss. They know that we will still be here. And whatever is lost is lost. We will try to recover it during this 24 hour. That's my thought. We'll think about it later. But for now, I really need to put my head around answering all the questions on live chat, processing these withdrawals, and make sure that everyone knows what exactly is happening. Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, how do you rate the performance of a team? Like, what would you say was, you know, if you had to give a score out of 10? To the team for how they performed, like 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, I'll give 12, 15. I mean,
amazing.
The team was completely. I mean, imagine the wallet team have to build something within 6 hours, and that's late at night. All the customer support was on deck. We've had huge number of inquiries, but the overall queuing time was less than 10 minutes. We've had all these withdrawals from review team, AML team, making sure that it was all processed. And then at the whole point, Bybit system was completely fine. Withdrawal system, trading system, everything worked smoothly, although we experienced the highest withdrawal. And then I think our media live stream team communication was on point. So, yeah, no, I don't think there's another team in the world can do this better.
Okay, so I mean, I must say, I agree with you. I think the way this was handled is a masterclass in leadership. And I mean, I've never seen an organization in any situation manage a crisis like this, which is unbelievable. Have you ever been in a situation like this before? I mean, like, how does this? This is obviously the biggest situation you've ever dealt with. But
no, I've never lost 1.5 billion before. So
I hear you. But have you ever been in any kind of crisis that is? I mean, it's, you know, like crises are not always about losing 1.5 billion.
Right.
Have you ever been in any crisis that has been relatively this big? Because, you know, 1.5 billion when you've got X is big, but it's not like, is this the first time that your leadership in this kind of crisis has been tested?
On this type of caliber or damage, for sure. But we've experienced incidents as Bybit before. We've had times where the website went down for 30 minutes. We've had time that the trading engine was go haywire. Maybe margin calculation was wrong, that clients were getting, you know, wrong information. We've had time maybe they couldn't load up the website. But I think in terms of the pressure and the consequence, this is definitely the largest.
Wow. Okay. Let's move on to the next part, which is, well, first of all, the damage to the exchange. So right now, when I look at Arkham, there's about $12.5 billion still on the exchange. How much was there before the, before, after the hack, but before the withdrawals? Like, I'm trying to work out how much of the funds in Bybit were actually withdrawn.
We were around 20 billion mark, a little more than 20 billion before the incident.
Okay, so now you're 65% of it. So you still have about 65% of all your withdrawals. And at some point, I understand that money actually started coming in. So they were net deposits.
So I think it got to about 10 billion within 24 hours, and then it starts to slowly come back after that lowest point.
Well, look, I must say, I think that, you know, initially I thought there may be some real damage done to the exchange, but I think actually the way that you handled it, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe people saw this. You know, I would have thought that if you get hacked for $1.5 billion and people start withdrawing, at one point in my head, I thought, you guys are one of our biggest partners. You are our biggest partner. And I thought, this is a monstrous hit. But actually, after the way that you've dealt with this, I actually think that I don't want to say it, but I actually think that a lot of good actually came out of it, because the true test is not when everything's going well, but the true test is how is your partner or how is your service provider going to deal when there's a crisis? And I think, I mean, I must say, certainly you guys have come back with flying colors, and you've given me certainly a lot more reason to actually be loyal and stay and deal with an exchange like this, because I know how you guys deal with crises, and I don't know whether the rest could do it. So I think from that point of view, if there is a silver lining here, you guys have been stress tested to the max. And I mean, I think you've passed with flying colors. And I think if that's not a sign for consumers or investors to sign up or to stay with you guys, then I really don't know what is. I want to move a discussion to something else, and that is trying to get the money back. So in your head, do you have any hope that you're going to get this money back? Like, let's call a spade a spade. It's with a, right now, if we are correct, it's with a North Korean funded terrorist North Korean hacker funded association. Do you ever think that you will get this money back? Any chance?
We will try our best, and actually the team is already full steam on it. So since today, I think the focus have shifted to investigating of exactly what happened. And then the next part is trying to get the money back. So I think from this part, I'm really grateful that we received numerous overwhelmingly support from all the global partners that we work with. We've seen even the community rose up to support us. So there's actually a few things we will try to do. One of them is that we noticed immediately that the information is quite, although, you know, blockchain, everything is transparent, but there isn't an aggregated place where you can see where the fund is flowing on a lively update manner. And so we've kind of issued a bounty as well to everyone that if result in helping us recover the fund, we'll pay 10%. But then in my head, I'm thinking, how do you actually measure this and how do you give it out? Because it sounds like a huge number, but if you are someone in the community, how do you contribute? And this had been a problem within the industry, that there isn't a place where you aggregate all this information. So we're building a site called hackbounty.io. Hopefully it will be up within a few days. It does, it will track all of the flow. And if you can submit that your discovery to an endpoint, the endpoint would be, let's say, an exchange or a bridge. that you cannot trace anymore. And if you submitted that flow, we will record you as a bounty hunter. Everything is on the website. And then we will reach out to the end node to notify them. And if their reaction resulted in the freezing of the fund, then the bounty will be paid out. Yeah, and then there is a live update on how much of the end node is cooperating, who is not cooperating, within how long, and how much fund flow is going through that black hole. And this will also help with even a regulator. We already get the help of Interpol on our side, multiple regulators that we work with. They will help us as well to go to these endpoint to help to freeze orders and do all these things. So now we can invite, basically, you can imagine this community-driven contribution mode, everything transparent. You can help us to chase and the fund, and hopefully that could help to discover some of the fund. Yeah.
What does this mean for Bybit? I mean, you used to be $1.5 billion richer than you are. I know you guys had very big plans. I know you guys had M&A plans. I know you guys had, you know, investment plans. Like, can we expect all these investment plans to stop? Is it business as usual? What are the implications here?
Yeah, so my finance team already gave me the projection. With the current reserve that we have left, assuming that we get no revenue whatsoever, which is, even today, the trading volume is already back to 50 or 60% of previous, which we're confident that it's not going to go to zero. But even if it goes to zero, we have enough reserve to maintain the operation for about 10 to 12 months. That's without doing any firing or whatsoever, right? But what it means really is really the big plans. We've had a few target of actually M&A, even in the levels of billions, and that would have to for sure be postponed. But other than that, I don't see any immediate change to us. We're buying a few licenses, but those in kind of a newer level, it's not as significant. It can be ignored. So I think for us, it's business as usual. But I think the next task on Monday, we're going to really start to look at the impact report from our BI team to analyze that what we have lost in terms of liquidity, customers, institutions, and how do we get it back. So I think that will be our next focus.
I mean, I must say, just from my point of view, I'd be surprised if customers don't come back after this. I mean, the exchange is solid. It's operating. You've proven that you're probably one of the best, that you are probably the best dealer of crises out there. I want to ask you a question, and this is probably a more theoretical question, but what about rolling back the ETH chain? Like one of the options here, it is an option. It's not an option that blockchain people like, because the whole thing about blockchain transactions is that they are immutable, that nobody can stop them, that once you put in the private key, you put in the private key. I mean, on the other hand, you know, there's $1.5 billion, which is in the hands of hackers. Like, what do you think of the idea of rolling back the chain? They've done it before. There is precedent. It has been done before. People don't like it in general. But what do you think of the idea of rolling back the ETH chain?
Yeah, so rolling back means another fork on Ethereum, right?
Yes.
So we've kind of spoken to the foundation and get their advice. I think the message or the indirect message was quite clear that they are not trying to start up the conversation of another fork on Ethereum. The last fork they did was a hack that cost, on the monetary term, not that big, but it was 30% of the Ethereum supply. This one, although was the biggest in terms of US dollar, but we're about 0.3% of the, or 0.4% of the Ethereum total supply. So that's their official answer. But again, I think there's multiple, and thanks to the multiple requests on Twitter, on the community about the possibility of that. And we understand that Ethereum is, you know, proof of stake right now. So the possibility, I think, stand with the community that maybe we can start a vote and see if the miners are willing to do this. But yeah, I think it might be a long stretch. Yeah.
Look, I agree with you, and I do agree with you, and I do like the idea of immutable and everything else. But if big organizations and institutions are going to feel safe in blockchain, then you know what happens if $20 billion landed in the hands of Iran and Iran used this to fund a war? You know what I mean? And I know that the principles of blockchain, but isn't there a line somewhere where you draw the line and you say, you know, if this happens, then we have to roll back. You know, like,
no, I agree. Look, the consequence of, so that's why I think my priority today is really trying to think about chasing the money. It's not even about getting the money back. So Bybit, you know, can whatever. It's the idea of you have 1.5 billion now goes to the North Korean group, which can be funded for nuclear weapon, many different things that are sanctioned. So this is why, even in today, I made a post about one of the bridge. I think they were not willing to help us.
And, I saw that.
I told them it's not about me anymore, and it's not about Bybit. It's really, you know, the OFAC and maybe the Interpol will come to you because you are essentially helping the sanctioned North Korean group. So I think this is how this matters. And again, I agree. There is a point because when someone else hacked it, it's very different. And we are confirmed that this is the North Korean group that's hacked it. And that means this money could be used on very wrongdoings that eventually will end to impact all of us in different parts of the world. Yeah. So again, I think it might be worth it to try to talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, lastly, I mean, you guys now need to buy back ETH, right? And if you look at the market now, I think the market's kind of anticipating that you guys need to buy back ETH because everything is down except ETH is up today. So, I mean, maybe the market's taking a bet that you guys are short ETH and you guys are going to start buying up $1.5 billion worth of ETH. What are your thoughts there? Where are you on that?
Well, in fact, we have completed most of the purchase already. It was all through OTC. So actually, there has been a lot of Twitter, I think, on-chain discovery, seeing that multiple institutions are sending us ETH. And that's because we already started the purchasing. Because it's critical for us to get back to the proof of reserve of one-to-one pack. And even, you know, for our regulator, for our compliance reasons, that we cannot leave a hole there for too long. I believe it will be completed for sure by Monday, all of the buyback of the Ethereum. Yeah.
Ben, I must say, you've been great to us and you've been great to the industry for a long time. And now I think I want to ask you something on behalf of the industry, and that is, how can we help you? What do you need from us? Like, you've just gone through a massive crisis. You've gone through, you know, probably one of the worst things. You didn't have to do what you did. You did the right thing. You were transparent. You acted like a true leader. What help do you need from the industry? What help do you need from us? How can anybody help you?
Yeah, we're going to be launching the hackbounty.io site by next week. We will really need the community to help us on there. It will be a transparent dashboard. Anyone can register as a hunty bounter. And if your contribution eventually lead to, you can see it virtually, that maybe you reported one part of the journey of the fund of, let's say, $1 million. And if that was eventually uncovered, we will prepay the bounty. So forget about court, forget about freeze orders. The moment an exchange freezes it, we will prepay the bounty to you. So that's this tremendous. Is the first time ever the industry, we have something virtualizing it. And if you are participating, this will pay you. So we want all the community to help us on that. And then also on it, it will show a list and a ranking of the end node, whether it's exchange or bridge, that don't cooperate in terms of total amount that's been leaked through there and the time has taken. Then I think it will be very clear to see who's helping us, who's not helping us, and maybe spread the word for us. Yeah.
Well, listen, yeah, I think at some point you should probably engage with Zach XBT because he was doing amazing work. And I don't know if you noticed, but his work was the work that came every single time.
We're gonna already put all of his work that down, and whatever his work helped with uncovering, he's gonna get paid. So he's gonna be a big investigator on the site. Yeah,
amazing. Ben, listen, first of all, I want to say sorry for what happened. I think it's a terrible, terrible thing, and I can't even imagine what it's like to lose that amount of money and to deal with pressure. I think well done for the way that you handled it. It's a masterclass in crisis management. It's a masterclass in leadership. I do think this is a case study. I want to congratulate you. I assure you that if you need anything as a community, the Banter community is going to be here for you. The crypto community is going to be here for you. And yeah, well done, my friend. Well done for the way that you handled it.
Thank you. No, thank you for the support. And all along, I think the Banner community has supported us. Thank you so much. Really good to see you all and good to tell the story here. Thank you.
Yeah. Great, Ben. Thank you so, so, so much, my friend. I know it's 1 o'clock in the morning or what's it? 1:30 in the morning where you are, right?
Yes. I'm used to it now.
Go get some sleep, my friend. Go get some sleep, my friend.
Okay.
You deserve it. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Well, guys, I don't know. That was a masterclass in leadership. And I mean, also a very different kind of show. And I think the one thing that really sticks out for me here is Bybit is probably one of the most jacked institutions in the world. I must say, even as a partner to Bybit, I don't think I ever realized how sophisticated this organization was. Like the way that Ben describes how they dealt with management, the way that they describe their protocols, the way they describe how they reacted, just really gives me an idea of how complex. They've got like 2,000 employees around the world. It just gives me an idea of how complex this organization is and how well they run their business. Now, if that doesn't give you confidence in these guys, then I don't know what would give you confidence. I've got more confidence now in them than ever, specifically also because of the way that Ben dealt it. The other thing, which is not something that I really want to talk about, but I'm going to talk about this today as well, is the importance. I think this highlights the importance of safety. And here you've got an organization that was hacked. They don't even know how they were hacked yet. Can you believe it? They're 48 hours after the hack. They still don't know how they were hacked. This is a great time for everybody to be questioning everything you do in the crypto world. Where are your keys? Can anybody access your keys? How do you manage your crypto? Do you surf with a VPN or do you not surf with a VPN? And I know I keep saying this to you guys, but there are just not enough precautions that you can take. You know that just this week, I mean, I just have to show you something this week. We had the Bybit hack, but then I don't know if you guys seen this, but one of our friends, a very good friend of the channel, is House of Crypto. And I don't know if you saw what happened to Pete from House of Crypto. If you go and watch this video, it's one of the videos that he made.
Emergency video, and it's one that I really didn't want to make. Yesterday, my computer got hacked. Not only have I lost tens of thousands of dollars, which I'll tell you about in this video and how it all happened, but most importantly for you right now, my Twitter page is not under my control.
Here's another hack. And again, this is another sophisticated party. This is a guy who teaches people about crypto, and he was hacked. Guys, I cannot stress to you how important it is that you really, really, really question everything that you're doing online. And I really encourage you to take out whatever tools that you possibly can to protect yourself. Number one, I think get yourself a ledger. Get yourself a ledger. There's no link. Maybe just text Amy to put a link to get a brand new ledger in the description. Number two, please, please, please go to the link below and get yourself a VPN. If this hasn't convinced you that it's worth $2.99 a month to get a VPN to mask your IP address, I don't know what's going to convince you. Lastly, and again, something that I didn't really want to speak about today, but I will, is I was in Hong Kong and I discovered a product which I think is a very, very, very good product. The link for that product is over here. It's called Kerberos. It's this tool over here. One of the best tools that I've seen, and I'll explain to you how it works. Effectively, it's a Google extension. You press that button and you get yourself a Google extension. And that Google extension actually reads the code of websites that you are surfing. It doesn't have a blacklist because most of these protectors actually have a blacklist of protected sites. The problem is that if the blacklist is not updated immediately, then the problem is that that malicious site won't be on a blacklist. What this extension does is it actually reads the code of the website you're on. And if that website is a draining website, it actually pops up and it says, hold on a second, don't transact this website. It's a draining website. I'm reading it in the code of the website, which means that it's happening real time. Now, just to give you an idea of basically how it works is you don't actually pay for the extension. It just, on certain DEXs, it takes a tiny, tiny, tiny fee from the exchange or over and above the exchange. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it actually protects you. I really suggest that you guys go and have a look at this. It protects you in real time. Go and look at anything that protects you. Now is a good time. Now, just with these guys, number one, they protect you from EVM and Sol issues. They've had zero losses for 2 years plus. And if you do get a loss, you're covered up to $30,000 if they misdetect it. Try it. And again, I say to you, if this week hasn't convinced you to protect yourselves, and I didn't want to come here and show safety to you, but I know that a lot of you aren't well protected. Really, guys, get a VPN. Get yourself this Chrome extension. It's probably the best one that I've seen, and I've seen quite a few of them in the industry. You don't even pay for it. You don't, not like you pay a monthly fee. You land up paying a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage when you trade with certain DEXs. That's it. It's something that you really need, really, really, really need. This whole week, we will be dealing with security and safety, because I guess that we've now realized that's probably one of the most important things in crypto. Anyway, I will see you guys again tomorrow. Normal programming tomorrow. Two shows. One is we'll bring you coverage of the Hong Kong consensus, which we were at last week. And then we'll have our normal show tomorrow. So I'll see you guys again tomorrow. Until then, let me know if you enjoyed this kind of show. Let me know in the comments if and likes if you enjoyed this kind of show. And if you do, maybe I'll hopefully do a lot more of these. See you guys again tomorrow. Until then, trade well, my friends.